Jimmy, Jimmy Crane, Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Jimmy Crane's an improv nerd. Jimmy Crane's a nerd.
Oh, hey everybody, this is Jimmy Crane, and you are listening to another episode of Improv Nerd, and we're sponsored by the good people at Pan Theater in Oakland. Now, if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area and you're looking to get your improv fixin', I want you to check out Pan Theater's Improv Dojo drop-in class. It is a fun chance to laugh and to learn and to play. And also be sure to check out Pan's quarterly auditions for House Teams, Awkward Face, and Liquid Mind, and Sunday Brunch. Visit pantheater.com for details. Now, Pan Theater has been bringing improv goodness to the San Francisco Bay Area for over a decade. Visit pantheater.com for current shows and class schedules. But wait, there's more. Pan Theater offers master-level improv workshops with leading guest instructors, including me, Jimmy Crane, the host of Improv Nerd. Last year, I was there 3 times, and I had a great, great time. All you need to do is visit pantheater.com for upcoming master-level workshops. That's pantheater.com. And if you're here in Chicago, you have to try my award-winning improv classes here at the Art of Slow Comedy, where we teach you, before you can be funny, you need to be real. And guess what? You're even funnier. I have a Guts Level 2 class where we focus on two-person scenes. That's the foundation of long form. You can't do good long form unless you have good two-person scenes. That class is limited to 12 people, and it starts February 25th. For more information, please go to my website. That's jimmycarain.com. That's jimmycarain.com for information on the Art of Slow Comedy. We have an amazing show for you today, and all we had to do is go to Boise to get it. Our guest today is legendary, and I'm not using that word loosely here. I sincerely mean it. Legendary teacher, improviser, and actor from the UCB, Will Hines. He's been performing at the UCB since 2000, so he has seen a lot. He's seen it grow to what it is today. He also ran the training center there in New York. That was before he decided to move to Los Angeles, where, guess what, he performs and teaches at the UCB in L.A. We talked to Will about how he came to New York in the late 90s and then discovered improvisation, and how he then got involved with the UCB in those early days, and how he's seen things evolve over the years. We discussed with him what the game of the scene means to him, and we try to illustrate it as we improvise together. This episode was taped in Boise, Idaho for the Idaho Laugh Fest, and I want to thank Megan Bryant for bringing me down there to do a live Improv Nerd and teaching some workshops. And I got to tell you something, it was not easy getting there. There's not many direct flights to Boise, Idaho, and I had one scheduled on Thursday afternoon. But by the time I got there, it had been canceled because it was snowing here in Chicago. So I had to I had to fly into San Francisco and stay in a hotel called Aloft, which was, it's just, when did hotels become nightclubs? It was one of those like nightclub hotels, you know, where the lobby's got all that like mod furniture and they're like blasting like boom, 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 boom kind of music. And the guy who works the front desk is kind of like, he has total attitude, like you're not good enough. So I stayed there, and then the next morning I had to take a direct flight to Boise. And I have to say, for a small town, I guess small city, I really enjoyed Boise. But you know, for me, I base a city if it's good. This is my criteria. If they have a P.F. Chang's, and I can walk from my hotel to the P.F. Chang's. You are going to love this episode. Will Hines is so thoughtful about improvisation. You are going to love it. Here it is, the Will Hines episode.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd, oh yeah. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
Will!
Jimmy.
It is so good to have you on the show finally, because we've been talking email and on the phone.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I am excited too. So let's start. You describe your house growing up as a nonverbal, sad, and drunk.
Great place to start.
Okay. How did this prepare you for a career in comedy?
I feel like whatever, anybody who's funny, it starts as a defense mechanism, right? Usually it's like the nerd who wants attention that they're not getting, or your want to fight back against the bully who's like stronger than you, and you can't, so you make fun of them and run away. But for me, it was just like, you know, I'm from New England, and my family, I think like maybe a lot of families are like this, they don't talk about anything. Like the Thanksgiving table could explode into flames and nobody would bring it up. And it was very emotionally repressed. So I feel like just talking about things in humorous, like dry ways is the only way you could address anything, you know what I mean?
And then you also, your mother died when you were 15.
That's right.
What kind of impact did that have on you?
It was sad. I don't recommend it. It was bad. She was a super funny woman, very sarcastic. I mean, like, maybe a lot of people think their parents are funny, but my mother was like weird. Like, my sixth grade dance, and I was a young sixth grader, my mom and her sister showed up in prom dresses pretending to look for dates.
Did you like that as a kid, or were you embarrassed by it?
I thought it was funny, but I remember being shocked still. I mean, like, wow, she's really going all the way. Look at this.
Did she find anyone?
No, but her sister threatened to make out with my friend Rob Murray. I mean, you just shouldn't say make out to your nephew. I mean, it was just a weird conversation. They were a very funny family. So my mom died of cancer, and it was like really sad because your mother dies. But also, she was the facilitator amongst all the rest of us. I have two brothers and then my dad, so it was all men in the house, none of whom would talk to each other. Nice people, but without our mother to like be like, your father wants you to do this, it would just be like, we don't know what he wants.
So like, if I went into your house, it would be the
all of us in our rooms watching TV separately. I mean, I think a lot of people have like family dynamics like that. You ever see the show Freaks and Geeks? Does anybody remember that TV show? There's a scene where the character Bill is like home alone because he's got a single mom and his mom's working. And he just like comes home and he takes like individually wrapped cheese out of the fridge and like a Coca-Cola and turns on Mike Douglas and watches like stand-up comedians and he's like eating the slice of cheese. My brothers and I all cried like when we watched that. We're like, oh God, that's what it was like when we grew up. We were by ourselves. The TV raised us, basically. Just because, again, nice people separated by rivers of like, how do we talk to each other?
And you also told me that you would listen to Monty Python and then record sketch shows and stuff.
Oh yeah, God, Jimmy, yes.
You're embarrassed about that?
No, you know what? I'm proud of it.
Okay.
My friends and I, we would get comedy albums or cassettes, and Monty Python. Do you guys know Monty Python?
Yeah.
And we loved their records. Their records have like sketches where they kind of go from one to the other one, like with sound effects and like switching radio channels. So we tried to make our own. This is like in eighth grade. So we spoke in British accents because that seemed funnier. And did like game show parodies. And
do you remember anything from that?
Yeah, we did Math Counts, which was like a super hard math game show where the contestants hated the host for being a know-it-all.
But you did it in a British accent.
Yes, we did, like, hello, welcome to Math Counts. Here we are, your first question. Is a congruent angle or this angle, blah, 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 blah. But we also did like, we got into the production values of it a lot. We just had like a boombox with like two cassette recorders. You could just dub from one to the other, play one in high speed to make like a chipmunk voice. We got a microphone and like dipped it in a huge bottle so we could talk into it and make echo sounds. We were more into the product. We were like Phil Spectors and Butch Vigs.
But you had no inkling. You were a journalist major, right?
Yeah. I you know, that was just like comedy nerd junior high stuff. When I went to college, I was going to be a journalist.
And then in 1999, you've been in New York for about 3 years now because
yeah.
You came at 26. You say, okay, I'm done with journalism. I'm going to the big city, and you.
An editor I worked for was like, "Get out of the business.
Get out
like,
of journalism.
Newspapers are dying. It's get out now while you're like a child."
So you
and
decided.
I believed him.
And so you go to you go to New York.
Yeah.
And you you see four people: Matt Walsh, Matt Besser, Amy Poehler, and Ian Roberts, the original Upright Citizen Brigade. They don't even have a space. They're at the Solo Arts.
Yeah,
I believe.
Clap for them. Yeah, do it, nerds. They are really,
and
really
you
cool
see
people.
Them perform.
Yeah.
How does this change how you look at improv?
Yeah, so it blew me away. Before I saw the UCB, improv to me was like the worst thing ever. It was like, maybe that's not totally fair, but it was like childlike and silly and very hammy, you know? You know what, I don't mean, it was fun, but I felt like it. I had to kind of shut off a lot of my brain to enjoy the improv I'd seen before that, you know? Like, improv to me before was like this, like. Like that?
So if you're listening on the podcast, Will just like pantomimed like this kind of big, broady.
Yeah.
You know.
You know what? That's kind of funny. I don't know. I shouldn't shit on that style so much. But I bring that up because the UCB came out. I didn't know who any of them were. They weren't like famous. Their show on Comedy Central hadn't even started yet. I think they were making it, but it hadn't like broadcast. And they were like as cool. They were like rock stars in that they didn't give a shit. They would just like sit and like talk to each other like, Amy, get over here. Let me ask you something. How come this gym is so weird? They fuck to get the weight off of you or something like crude and low energy, and they were super funny, and they were the coolest people in the room doing improv. I just had never thought that you could be the coolest people in the room doing improv. To this day, they are like cool people like the UCB. You know, like if I try to get my friends to do an improv, to see an improv show, it's pulling teeth a lot of times. But if it's a UCB show, everybody wants to go. The room is filled. And this is, again, before Amy is like a famous person. They were just like awesome. So it blew me away. I was like, these guys are the best.
So then you decide that you're going to take classes with them.
Yeah.
And you were lucky enough to study with people like Kevin Mulaney, Mitch McGee, Michael Delaney.
Right, Mitch was my classmate. He wasn't a teacher.
Okay, Ali Farinakian, Matt Walsh,
right.
Ian Roberts. But you said the person that had the biggest impression on you was Armando Diaz.
That's right. Yeah, he was my first teacher that I like felt great with.
And what was it about Armando's teaching that really?
So Armando's one of these teachers who like teaches like without ego. Like it's not about him putting on a show as a teacher. He just had. I don't know. He was like a Zen master, man. He just had like short pieces of advice. You'd be up on stage like 100 times a class. He'd be making little adjustments. By the fifth session, you're good. Like you don't even know how it happened. You're comfortable on stage. I'm not an expressive person, right? I come from this New England family, very shy. When I started doing improv, I was like terrified of being boring. And I was like, I can't be an actor. No one's going to pay attention to me. And so I'm very self-conscious, right? You know, in Armando's class, that went away. I was like, oh, I am funny. I'm doing good. You know, and like, and if I'm in trouble, I'll use these three or four little tricks that Armando says. Simple things, nothing like revolutionary.
What were some of the tricks you remember?
Well, he would just go like this. When you did an emotional reaction, he would just wave his hands, gesture higher to do like more.
More of the emotion.
So if I was like, you know, I was like, oh, thank you, Jimmy. He'd be like, I'd see it like in the corner of my eye, and I'd be like, yeah. get bigger.
Did you?
And
did you not think you were
that.
Funny?
I did not.
When? How did that change?
I mean, only recently.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you affirm or get to that point that, you know what? I've been doing this for a long time. I'm funny.
It wasn't until people that I thought were funny picked me to do things.
Who picked you?
Like people, classmates of mine that I thought were hilarious in the UCB world would be like, Will, come do this show over other people. Then I was like, I must be good, right? Because they asked me to be here.
And you're 45 years old. I mean, yes. You've been doing this for 19 years.
Yeah.
It just
I think it took like 7 years
okay.
for me to feel like I was good at it. And I was teaching it. Yeah.
How long did it take you to feel good as a teacher?
I felt better as a teacher than a performer pretty early. Mm-hmm. I felt like I understood it and could explain it more reliably than I could do it.
And how did you become a teacher at the UCB?
UCB is like really, it was really informal. Like I coached one of the Herald teams, one of the performance teams. And there was a teacher on that team named Julie Brister. She recommended me to Kevin Mulaney.
Who was then heading the
program. The head of the school. former Chicago guy who the UCB had brought to New York. He just called me up out of the blue, was like, do you want to be a sub? Like, I don't even know how it happened. I had only coached like 5 practices. I hope he probably doesn't know that. But he just called me up and said, do you want to be
now.
A sub?
He
does
now.
And
what was that first class like?
I stole everything that I remembered from Armando's classes and Ian's classes. I told myself just like, get him up on stage, tons of reps, so that they feel better. I don't have any advice for them. But if they just do it like 10 times, that'll be better than any advice I could give, you know? So I would just do like very simple structured exercises and just do it over and over again.
And hope that they don't ask you any questions.
I mean, I would just give, yeah, these also I'm teaching the early level, so they don't have that many questions. I just say like the basic things, you know, like play at the top of your intelligence, don't be coy, don't ask questions, 2 more, get up again. I faked it till I had a feel for it.
What is your definition of the UCB's philosophy?
Find the game in the scene and play it.
Okay, so what does that mean to you?
That means that assume that every improv scene is going to have one central idea, like you don't know what it is when you start, but you'll find it. Once you find it, zero in on it and make that the whole thing. So that when it's over, you can look back and be like, that scene was about X. And it combats improv's tendency to be really aimless and everywhere. Although when you and I do a scene, it'll probably be aimless and everywhere because I always forget.
We can
to
only
do this.
Hope.
Yeah.
Now, you've also said that the game of the scene is the judgmental part of improv.
Yeah.
Can you explain that?
Have you guys heard that term, the game of the scene?
Yeah.
Some people haven't. It's like the UCB's like thing. They're really into. Okay, here's how I would translate it. So in an improv scene, the way I think of it, obviously everyone's got their own way of thinking about it, I feel like there's 2 sections. The first section is like the discovery, exploration, actor portion, where you're just like, say yes, commit, make specific choices, make it real. And then you reach a point where something funny happens, and then after that, the actor can go away, sort of, and the writer takes over. And it's like, all right, now force that funny thing to happen again, contrive things that exploit it that maybe aren't so natural and organic, but things that a writer would prefer to happen.
Would it be easier if
and
we...
And so that's judgmental... Yeah, what's up?
Would it be easier if we... No, you were going to... I'm sorry, judgmental part of improv.
So like the first part, the acting part, is the freeing part. It's like, don't think about it. Like, be in the moment, be free.
That's the organic part.
That's the kind of fun part of improv, okay. I think, and the part that gets written about in like magazine think pieces. Mm-hmm. I learned to say yes. I learned to be myself. I mean, I shouldn't make fun of it. It's a really important revolutionary way to think. But the second half of it is the UCB's part, which is like, all right, enough of that. Be funny now. Like the UCB classes, there was a harsh element to it. Where like starting like in the second or third level, teachers, you'd do a scene and teachers would be like, all right, what do you think was funny about that? And you'd be like, oh, nothing. I don't know. I'm dying up here. I have no ideas. Why did you think it was funny to do this? And I'd think like, you're acting like I had choices. I said the only thing I could think of. But it gets in your head like, what was funny about that? And then you're watching improv like, where is the turning point? And I think the UCB produces very aggressive, writer-oriented improvisers, for better and worse.
So let's take this, your theory of the game, the UCB's game of the theory, and you're telling us about it,
okay.
And breaking it down. And let's improvise,
okay.
In that style.
Okay.
Okay, so... Let's.
We'll get a suggestion.
We're gonna
we'll
get
do
a
like
suggestion.
A discovery portion, find a thing, and then you're going to see me turn into a judgmental weirdo writer.
Great. Excellent.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that because I think it'd be really helpful.
Okay.
So what kind of suggestion do we want to take?
I would like a word or a phrase, just a simple one.
Banana.
Your mama. Bananas.
Okay, so banana.
Your
so
mama.
When you hear banana.
Banana is what I heard first.
Okay, so how do you break banana down, that suggestion?
I mean, this is the actor writing part. I just want a real world that we can live in. I'm not worried about being funny.
Okay.
Maybe something specific or striking.
Okay.
So.
You'll go to the environment?
I'll just think of I want to give you, my scene partner, something specific to start building off of.
Okay.
So I'll just say like, hey Jimmy, did your mom write that note on your banana in your lunch? Your mom writes you notes?
Yeah. Yeah, so what?
That's cool. Your mom like writes little things to you?
Yeah. She's like, oh, I miss you, Jimmy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You're not going to hit me for it, are you?
I was going to. I came over here to hit you.
Yeah, I thought so.
I'm still thinking about it.
Well, you better.
I'm so impressed that your mom writes, "I miss you."
Yeah.
My mom's a. She's a roadie.
I know.
You know, she works at the Hartford Civic Center. She's tough.
Yeah.
That's why I'm tough. Jimmy.
I know. And we're never supposed to bring that up.
You don't bring up that my mom's a roadie,
yes,
right?
Yes.
We're not allowed to talk about that, right?
Yeah. She travels around with other rock bands and she sleeps with other guys.
Yeah, and it's cool, but we don't talk about
that.
No,
we don't. We don't.
Because I don't have a problem with it, right?
No.
You know the rules, right?
Yeah.
We don't talk about that.
No.
You want to get hit?
No. We know you have. We don't even know who your father is, your real father, but we don't talk about that.
We don't talk about that, right?
Yeah, right.
There's several men who were in contention to be my father.
Yeah.
But that's not something we can talk about because I'm real sensitive about
right? Yeah.
That's nothing we bring up.
Yeah, and your older brother does a lot of drugs, but.
Hey!
I'm not going to say anything.
That's off the table.
It's cool.
Yeah.
It's off the table.
He's moved from cocaine to methamphetamines.
Okay.
That's nothing we're going to bring up right now.
No. I thought he was on heroin, but I'm not going to say anything.
You're lucky you're following all the rules, otherwise I'd hit you.
Oh, cool.
This sweater you're wearing, is that a knit sweater?
Yeah, my mom wrote it. I mean, she wrote...
She wrote a message in this sweater.
Yeah. It says, "I love you, Jimmy."
So you can't mistake it for her talking to anybody else. I thought my mom was saying I love you to me, but she was talking to Nikki Six behind me.
You know what?
What?
You're not as bad as you think you are.
Yeah, I know.
I think sometimes you just try to like be the tough guy, but really deep down, don't hit me. You're really hurting inside like the rest of us.
All right, come closer because I have to whisper this to you. Come closer to me right now.
Are you sure you're not going to hit me?
No, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm still considering it.
Okay. All right.
I know I'm not as bad as I think I am, all right? I'm very self-aware.
Okay.
But I don't tell anybody that.
Okay.
And neither do you.
Okay.
What are you going to tell people when they ask what happened back here?
I'm going to say nothing.
No! Jimmy, I hit you in the solar plexus.
Okay.
I roughed up your esophagus.
Okay.
Bring up the esophagus.
Esophagus.
Big words confuse people. They'll stop asking questions.
Okay.
Okay, that's good.
Okay, so let's break down the scene.
Okay. So, we had two games. We had two games. Each of our characters had a game. So the first portion is just the reality. It's kids, lunchtime at school, late elementary school, early middle school, right? It seemed like that? You're bringing your lunch to school and you're talking about there's bullies, so somewhere in there.
So that game is a status.
That's not the game. That's the base reality. That's the world we're in.
Okay,
that's
the world.
That's pre-game.
No game is there. It's just...
That's the canvas that we're dealing with.
Give me the pen so I can take notes.
Okay, sorry. Right. I have a nervous habit.
Okay.
I will cling and...
All right, so that's the world we're living in.
Do you guys expect it to be this analytical? You're like, I thought this was going to be funny. Some of you like it. Some of you were like, they like it. I'll just sit through this. Maybe they'll tell me later what the hell this was. All right. So we're waiting for just something to turn, right? So the first unusual thing is that, I mean, to me it was slightly unusual that there was such a sweet note, I think. Like, mm-hmm. I miss you. Not hugely, just like a little bit more emotive than I feel like a kid might have in his lunch. Did you guys feel that way? Not super crazy, but like a little bit notable. So I thought the game might be like super effusive mom.
Mm-hmm.
That the game might come through you.
Okay, so let's go to that.
Yeah.
How would I play that game?
You would have to I kind of cast my vote when I pay attention to it. I'm mm-hmm. like, hey, wow, your mom's, God, that's really sweet. I'm paying attention to it, right? So I'm like, maybe this is our game. I'm framing it. I'm slowing everything down and I'm like pointing at it. But it's not definite. I'm kind of just saying to you as an improviser, do you think that's interesting? You might not. And... To me, you acknowledged it, you agreed with it, but you were more interested in my reaction. You were like, don't hit me, we're not supposed to talk about that. So to me, you were kind of saying, no, the game is how you have all these secrets that you don't want to talk about that everybody knows. Mm-hmm. And that game became the main dominant game of the scene.
Okay, so let's go back to the part where...
But that's clear, right? That's not crazy. Isn't that what it was like to watch it? Yeah. It looked like it might be about this, but then it's about this, and that's what it's
okay,
about.
Okay, so let's go where the road splits into two.
Okay.
And let's go back to that part where your initiation of the game was the mom...
Like, wow, your mom's really... She said that, huh?
Yeah.
My mom's never said that.
Oh. My mom says that all the time.
God.
Yeah. She said, this one note is like, I love you, I miss you, I want you more in my life.
Wait, that's all in one lunch? Wait, what's that last part? I want you more in my life?
Yeah, I sleep in her bed.
Jimmy.
What?
Aren't you kind of, you're kind of old for that, right?
I'm 14.
Yeah, that, I don't think you should be sleeping in your mom's bed anymore.
She gave me this ring.
I'm going to tell you something.
Okay, what? What?
We're married.
What?
We're going to get married.
You can't get married to your mother.
Yes, she said we can.
No. There's no state southern enough that would let that happen.
She said since my dad's not around a lot, she wants another man in her life.
Okay, I get that. I'm the oldest in my family, and I'm kind of the man of the house when my dad's not around. My dad's around a lot, though. He's great. My family's great. But that doesn't mean you get married. Like, all right, Jimmy, I got to ask you something.
Yeah.
I was going to say no judgment, but I am going to judge you on this answer. Do you, like, kiss your mom?
Yeah, don't you?
Okay, yes, that's a dumb question. But I mean, like, like, romantically? Like, our movie style?
Yeah, but you told me I can't tell anybody.
Okay, I can understand that. Look, this overwhelms me, and I'm going to pretend that I didn't hear it.
All right, see? Now, I got scared in there.
You did?
I got scared in there because we were going kind of dark.
Oh, yeah? That makes sense.
Did you guys feel we were going dark?
Yeah.
Okay. And how were you reacting to it? You were okay with it?
Yeah.
But you acted it well, Jimmy. Like you're a Chicago guy, so you know how to act.
Well,
in New York, we would have like tagged that shit out and just been like an orgy of. No, that's not true. That's not
well,
fair to say.
Because I started. To me, it was more about like this kid filling the emotional need for his mom.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, well, if we're gonna keep heightening this.
Yeah.
You know, it may have
to go
to that. And I actually resisted. Can we go back to that part where you said, do you kiss your mom?
I think you could have said no to that. Okay. I don't think that'd be like
a
bad...
Okay, let's see what happens when we do it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Jimmy, so do you, like, romantically, like, kiss your mom?
No. God, okay. Do you think I'm sick or something?
No, okay. It just sounded like, okay, yeah, that's good. I'm glad.
We hold hands.
God, you're right on the line.
All right. Okay. What do you think about that?
I think that's better.
Okay.
I think that's what Ian would like. Ian Roberts would like that better.
Why would he like that better?
Ian never liked, I shouldn't say there's no absolutes, but in general, he appreciated it when it could happen in the real world for as long as possible. He doesn't want it to heighten out of the real world until the very end. I shouldn't speak for him, but like, he would definitely teach, play it real, you know. Do you think that, your instinct was that your mother is, the mother of that character is just emotionally dependent, but not like sexually dependent.
Right, not at all.
So then you just say no to that. That's legit.
But you're going to get people going, well, you stopped heightening the game.
Yeah, this
or
is
you
what
denied
it's like,
it.
Yeah, this is what it's like to be in the UCB. Mm-hmm. We have these conversations all the time. Like, do you heighten too fast? What's the justification? Did you do it too early? Like, the good and the bad part in my point of view is, I don't think any other improv school, Jimmy, you would know this more than me, actually, I'd be curious, but I think that the UCB is unique in how much it focuses on this second half. Like,
second half of the scene.
This part where it's like, have a game and heighten it. I don't think that's traditionally something that is focused on, because there's so much danger of getting too unrealistic, forcing it too fast, too fake, it thwarts a lot of things that are good about improv. But the good part is, let's say none of you had even heard of improv or thought about it, and you've come into a bar, and Jimmy and I are going to do a set, and you don't even know what we're doing, you know what stand-up is, and we got to do a show. That kind of scene that hits it again and again and again wins over new audiences much better. They're like, oh, I get it. This kid's got a weird relationship with his mom, and there's all these payoffs. We had like 7 hits on it. That's unusual for improv, I think. But at UCB, they kind of force it. But, yeah, they do. I don't mean to qualify that. I mean, I do. Oh, God, I'm a mess.
Okay, so are you all right? Because you seem lost.
Well, no, I'm okay with it.
Okay.
I mean, you spend enough time. I mean, the UCB is big enough that there are all flavors of improvisers. I have a teammate, Michael Delaney, that you interviewed. He would loathe anything that heightened that fast. He hates it. He wants it real all the way, at the expense of it being funny. I mean, he is very funny, but he'd rather err on the side of it.
But that's almost counter of the UCB, because you mentioned demanding to be funny. In Chicago, there's this improvisation. It's not about being funny.
I know.
The
yeah.
UCB, it's like, we are going to be direct. This
yeah.
is funny.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, we would say Chicago in a pejorative sense to each other when we were students. Like, if we took too long, we'd be like, oh, what are you, Chicago? Get to it. We'd say that to each other. Like, joking, we also worshipped Chicago. Chicago was like the Mecca of where all improv came from, so we had an insecurity complex. Like, whenever somebody from Chicago came to New York, like Peter Gwynn or Jack McBrayer or Christina Gousis, these are all like big Chicago luminaries who moved to New York for a long time, they would be awesome. And they'd be like touched by God because they came from Chicago or studied with Dell. So they were awesome. So we also had like an insecurity complex about Chicago, like, fuck Chicago, man. We don't need that acting bullshit. We're fast, you know, like we're aggressive, we're funny. That was part of our identity, I think.
And
I mean, like someone
jokingly.
Do you
feel there's a reverse too, like in Chicago, like there's like.
I think there's a resentment against.
Where
I've
do you
noticed
think the resentment? Go on.
I think a lot of people, at least in New York, that's where UCB is most dominant. There's like not much competition for the UCB in New York City. People will do workshops whose whole description is just to oppose the UCB. That you'll find people who want to teach a workshop. It's like, the name of the workshop will be, forget the game of the scene. Come on by and just remember how to act and agree. And it's kind of like, you couldn't even sell that if there wasn't a UCB to rebel against. Like, that's just like a Burger King whose menu is not the Whopper or whatever.
Which one's
Burger King? Okay, not the Big Mac.
So you think there's people that have resentment towards UCB? Do you think it's jealousy?
Actually, I mean, sometimes, yes, but I think it's just that any system taken to an extreme has negative effects, and you got to correct for it. Yes. The ones I'm thinking about, there is. They're basically, they don't want to do it that way. They're mad that people are having success with it, so they're in denial that it works.
Why is people that come out of the UCB training, and we can name the people from Bobby Monahan to Andy Daly to the women in Broad City.
Yeah, the Broad City.
It's just, it goes on and on and
Aubrey
on.
Aubrey Plaza, Ellie Kemper on The Office, Zach Woods in Silicon Valley, Thomas Middleditch. He's more of a Chicago guy.
Lauren Lapkus.
Yeah.
I mean, the names go on and on.
Yeah.
What is it about the training that makes these people so prepared to success in TV and film?
I actually think that what makes that happen is not the game of the scene. It's that the culture around the UCB theater is like, once you get over a certain level of being known and respected in the UCB world, you do a million shows with a million people all the time. You practice multiple nights a week with different people. You mix and match a lot, and you watch each other. It's like going to a really intense university where you all are super aware of what everybody's doing. So like Aubrey is a friend of mine, And I saw her on Herald Night. You know, I saw her when she first got an improv team. I saw everybody in Herald Night. And I remember scenes that she did. She saw scenes that I did. Lauren Lapkus lived in New York for a year, and word quickly got around over how amazing she was. And me and friends of mine went to like an indie show to see Lauren Lapkus. And so it's like you're very tightly bound with each other. So it's like a weird cult church-like situation where everybody kind of brings each other up.
What do you say to the people that try to get into UCB and they say, oh, it's clicky?
I say, you're right. You're right on the money. You got it figured out. I say, don't force it. If you love it and it feels right, it'll work out. Like, just don't rush it. I feel like people say that everything's clicky. People like high school's clicky, college is clicky, my company's clicky, this group of friends is clicky. Clicky just means like I haven't met my friends yet, so I feel left out, so fuck those people. Which is totally natural, but it's like you make two friends, they don't feel clicky anymore. It doesn't, you have your place.
And the place has become so competitive now. I mean, when you got on a Herald team, it was basically you were asked, right?
I mean, I felt like it was an accomplishment when I got on, Jimmy.
But, I mean, you didn't have to audition.
No, I know, you're right. No, you're right.
And it wasn't blessed by fame, and it wasn't this big, you know.
No, right, that's true.
All of this stuff. How would Will Hines do today if he had to start out at the UCB?
Not as well. Definitely I had the benefit of it being a smaller world. But I did love it. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't have given up for a while. Because I loved it too much. It meant everything to me.
Would you have been on a Herald team today?
Not right away. I got on pretty early. And that wouldn't have happened in this current society. But I don't think I have such low self-esteem. I never thought I was going to get on a team. So I'd mapped out like 3 years ahead without getting on a team. I was in a practice group and I was like, all right, well, these guys are all going to get in a team and I won't. And I was like, well, then I already knew who I was going to ask to replace all those guys for my little indie group. And I knew what teachers I wanted to study with. I was like, I'll know when I'm done. And I'm not done with it, so it doesn't matter if it's done with me, sort of.
How do you deal with your low self-esteem? Because in comedy, it's so much about confidence.
Yeah, I do work on it. I'd say less than 4 years ago, after I turned 40, I explicitly tried to get my mental habits better.
What did you do for that?
Oh, Jesus. I mean, it doesn't work. But, you know, lots of stuff. Like meditation. And just making it a priority to have a good attitude towards yourself and the world. Like real hippie, new agey bullshit. Like gratitude, being nice, trying to focus on the good things. It's practice. You know, and like catching my brain when it's like being really mean to somebody in my head and like backing that off. Or it's being mean to myself.
Are you meaner to other people or yourself?
I mean, I believe that everybody is the same. Mm-hmm. However mean you're being to somebody else is how mean you're going to be to yourself at some point, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. Like they are simultaneous. So whatever one you have a chance to be nicer to first, do it.
Mm-hmm. Now, we improvised at the top, but we could improvise now as well. Would you like to do that?
Uh-huh.
Okay, great. So we're going to take a suggestion.
Okay.
Can we get a suggestion? Raisin bread, all right?
Raisin.
Can we get out of the chairs to improvise? I don't understand this thing about it.
I don't mind it just because we started. Yeah,
okay.
I'm cool with that.
But I almost feel like I did one with Horatio Sands. He sat in the chair.
That's because they're old. We're all old people. Horatio's old. Delaney's old. Like old people
like
to sit down.
Delaney didn't want to get out of the chair either.
Oh, Delaney would stay in a chair for the rest of his life if he could. Yeah.
Okay.
Is the improv scene even long enough here to have old people doing improv? As soon as someone turns 40, they're like, have a seat. Like, they start every scene by, like, sitting right down. It's a dead giveaway that a team is more than, like, 8 years old when they're in chairs the whole time.
Okay, great. So
not even biological age, like the improv age of the person.
Great. So Raisin Brandon, we're going to try to do this game of the scene. So what do I need to focus on for the game of the scene?
You just be your wonderful self and don't worry about
okay.
it. Just say yes and have fun.
We're pushing away. So okay.
Raisin Brandon, all right.
Raisin Brandon. Excuse me?
Yes.
I was looking for the milk.
Wow. You got some balls. You just come right back in the kitchen, camper, and look for milk?
Well, Mr. Johnson said, come in and get some milk.
That's a test. You really think you're allowed to just walk back here?
Yeah, Mr. Johnson said, walk back here and get milk for the rest of the campers.
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something about this camp. You're in seventh grade, right?
Yeah.
Let me tell you something about life. Everyone in the world is an asshole. And if you just try to, like, take what you want, and, like, you're going to get squashed. At this camp, we teach compliance and conformity. Blend in for fear of what people will do to you. Your name's
Zach.
Kyle. Zach?
Okay. Yeah. Kyle's my brother.
All right, Zach. I'll give you milk. Take it.
Just like that?
Yeah, just reach in and take it.
Oh, thanks.
Wait a minute. You're not scared of me?
No. No one's scared of you. Well, they call you Larry the Loser.
Still?
Yeah.
Are you shitting me, Zach?
No, I'm totally serious.
They call me Larry the Loser?
Yeah. They actually had a bet. They're like, how long is he going to stop and give you this bullshit lecture?
What?
Yeah, exactly. All that
they
stuff.
They can't do that, Zach.
Yeah.
No, but I'm cool now. I teach archery.
No one signed up. How many people signed up for archery?
One person.
Right.
I signed him up. Kyle. I signed up Kyle.
My older brother, he went home.
He left?
Yeah.
Kyle left. He's the only guy I had on my side.
I know.
Why?
And they said this. They said, you know what? You're gonna get really upset.
No, no. Yeah. I'm fine.
Yeah.
No. No, yeah. I'm great.
Oh, yeah.
I love Larry the Loser.
Yeah.
What? Nothing. Are you going to get the milk?
Everyone makes fun of your bug-out eyes when you get upset. Yes.
Kids are mean. You know that? You kids are mean. You're jerks.
Well, you know what? We don't care.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I said you had balls. I didn't know the balls you had.
Yeah.
This is insane.
Yeah.
You're in seventh grade.
Yeah. Your
voice changed last week.
So I'm not going to take the milk back, Larry. You bring the milk out there.
No way.
Because it's your job, Larry.
What? Don't you?
My parents pay you to bring the milk out there. All right? I don't want to hear any of your BS about anything.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
This is the worst day of my whole life.
Yeah.
All right. I'll do it. And I don't know why I'm doing this.
Because you're a loser.
No! No. Because I'm above it. I'm not going to give in to this. I'm not going to make myself a lesser, I'm not going to.
Are you crying?
No, I'm not.
Yeah, yeah. I won the bet.
How many bets?
Four bets. And the big one was making you cry. They said it would take 4 minutes, but I think I did it in record time. You are a loser, Larry.
Yeah. You go.
I'm going to get fired for this.
Larry.
I'm already thinking about how I'm going to think about this
Larry,
later in my life.
Larry.
How strong are you?
I'm a wrestler, Larry. Okay. I can't.
What the
give me the milk, Larry.
Wow!
You didn't really want to do that, did you?
Oh, my God!
You didn't want to do that, did you?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did.
Take the milk out there, Larry. Know your place in life. It's back here in the kitchen.
I hope you're poor.
See you.
Okay. All right.
All right. I did not know where we were. I mean, I knew where we were. You did a great thing.
Did I?
Yes, because at the beginning of the scene,
I thought we were in a store. And I was like, oh, what was the first line? I don't even remember it. But it was very...
You said, excuse me, I'm looking for the milk.
Right. Which means we had no relationship.
Yeah, that's all right.
All right. But you made a great move by...
I just wanted to be right in the middle of some shit.
It was a great move. It was a great move. What did you think of the scene? I was totally lost in terms of game of the scene. Totally lost.
We had character games. Those are the easiest ones to find. Like, my character had a game, which is that he's a loser. Like, he's the loser. He always loses. Mm-hmm. I guess your character had a game, which is just, like, he's the kid who's, like, you know, has high status. Like, he's the kid who's got the confidence of an adult. He's self-possessed, like a, not just a grown-up person, like a super well-adjusted grown-up person. Maybe even a Nazi-ish type A captain of industry. Carve somebody's stomach out for breakfast person. But nonetheless, self-assured. Mm-hmm. Like precociously self-assured.
So character games, why are those so easy and fun to play?
Point of view, like improv just lends itself to point of view. Mm-hmm. You manage your own point of view easier. It can withstand changes to circumstance. Neither of the scenes we've done have been weird world scenes where the game is just the world that we're in. Mm-hmm. Like, which, that's fine. But that's another kind of scene where we'd be like peas in a pod and in agreement facing a strange world that we're painting.
So give me an example of that we could do right now.
It would just be like, you know, we'd make a hint that we're in a strange situation. We'd be agreeing on
it. Give us a suggestion for a strange situation.
Right. I'll initiate a weird world.
Jurassic Park?
All right.
We want to agree, right, on this? Totally.
Yeah, okay. You and I will be on the same page.
Okay, great.
I'll be like, so Jurassic Park, hey, have you noticed? There's no dinosaurs here.
Yeah, I know.
They just told us that was the whole deal.
There's no dinosaurs. It's just grass.
But they're acting like we're always going to see them.
Yeah.
There's no dinosaurs here.
I know.
I don't think this place is what they say that it is.
No, I don't either. I think we should get a refund.
No, I'm gonna give them another chance.
Okay.
I really want to see dinosaurs.
I do too.
And if they have them, and we challenge them and they kick us out, I'm always going to wonder if right over the hill we could have seen an Apatosaurus.
I'm with you. I want to see a Tricyclosaurus or whatever, that one with the
Triceratops?
Bumps. Yeah.
Or the Stegosaurus. I get them confused. The Triceratops like the super rhino, and the Stegosaurus has the shit on its back.
The one with the bumps on
the back. Stegosaurus,
yeah.
Stegosaurus.
Yeah, I want to see that.
Me too.
Before we go, I want to see that.
We each paid $5,000.
I know.
It's not even that pretty here.
No, it's actually hot, and there's a lot of fleas.
The trees are bad.
Yeah, I don't think they're real. I think they're made.
I think they're fake trees that are designed to look fake and
yes,
bad.
Yes. I touched one and I got this black stuff. It was like chalk.
Paint or something.
Yes.
The hotel we're staying at is horrible.
No, it's awful. I don't think it's a real hotel.
Yeah, I don't think I'm on a bed, the one I'm sleeping in.
No. I went in the shower where the shower was supposed to be.
Yeah.
And they just had a word that said shower and then an arrow. And said water. But there was no water.
I saw that too, and I was like, maybe it's just broken. Maybe it's coming. Maybe later there'll be a shower.
You think we're here too early?
Maybe that's our fault.
Yeah.
They have a bonus package we can sign up for. I am going to do it.
I'm going to do it too.
Because maybe they just like only give the good stuff if you're like fully committed.
You're right, Stan. You're right. You know what?
No.
I don't think we're committed enough, and that's why we're not seeing the dinosaurs.
They can tell that we doubt it.
Yes, they can smell it. It's a scent. We're scaring off the dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs smell fear. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
Okay, good. It's on us. That makes me feel better. I can't believe if once again we went to a fake theme park and gave all our money for nothing.
Yeah. All right, scene. Okay. How was that?
Yeah, that's a weird world.
Yeah. That, for me, is it's totally out of my comfort zone.
That wasn't a great one.
Okay.
I was forcing it a little too much, but that's like a weird world. That's like where we're, the world is weird and we're not so much.
Okay. So
and except that we're being
let's take some
it.
Questions from the audience. This is just a blast. I could go all night with you. If we could turn the house lights up.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to all this improv theory nonsense.
Great. Okay.
I don't ever have a chance to talk about it a lot.
So with a show of hands, we've got time for some questions for Will, either about what we've been doing tonight or about the UCB or about his teaching or about his life or about low self-esteem. Great. So who's got a question? Right in the back?
How do you know when to exit?
When to what?
When to exit.
Like when to end the scene?
Yeah.
Oh, 3.5 minutes. It just feels like you've done enough to make it satisfying. I don't know, it's like music, you know, it just feels like you're at the end of the song. I don't know.
Well, how do you exit?
I mean, you just say, like... Well, these are still rough drafts, you know? Improv is the first draft, so some of them end up great and some of them don't.
What were you not... You didn't feel satisfied when we said scene? You wanted us to leave? Is that it?
Yeah. You know, how do you, you've done as much as you can.
Do you mean like I wanted more, like that scene had not earned its place yet, so you
right.
needed to do more work, or I don't like the manner in which you ended it?
Yeah, figure out a way to exit gracefully.
Oh, to come to it, yeah. I don't think improv is great at tying everything up super neatly and ending awesomely. Like, I don't think you can do that when you're making it up.
Great.
It just doesn't. It's like it just doesn't lend itself to that well.
Great. Another question. Right here. We're gonna get a microphone. This is a total professional. We're in Boise.
And Boise doesn't mess around.
What? Boise doesn't mess around.
I was just gonna project. Yeah. So, you guys were talking earlier about.
We would have given you a microphone, but your question was too critical of our stuff.
That's how we.
By the way, guys, great job.
Thank you.
I was really proud of.
Great.
It was an honor. No, so, I heard a lot of talk. You guys, you even mentioned it just again before, where it was almost comparing it to music.
Yeah.
When you're at UCB, or when you talk about like self-writing and kind of building improv around like a writer's kind of mentality, do you think of rhythm a lot? Like I always get the sense sometimes where. The rhythm of a scene is where the humor is lying as much as what's being said. I don't know, just kind of have thoughts on that.
I think of, when I think of music of the scene, I think of that as the tone and the agreement. Like, the tone of the voices or the physicality is something we got to agree on. I think of it in terms of, I don't think of it, the music in terms of the heightening or the game part. I think of it as the agreement acting part.
Got it, that
what's
makes
the
sense.
Feel of this world? That the other people in the scene are.
So again, that's kind of the first half moment
yeah,
of the scene,
I think
and then
of it
you
that
get
way.
To the gameplay. Cool.
Great. Another question. Right over here. Right there on the end.
So in improv, you're always encouraged to always say yes, but earlier you said, it'd be okay if you said no to that suggestion. I think it was the one about kissing the mom or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So how do you know when it's the right time to say no to something in an improv?
I love that question. I think that's super difficult. But, saying yes to the scene is not the character literally agreeing to everything. It's like a spirit of going with the flow of the scene in the most interesting direction. He was saying yes to his character's choices he'd already made. When he says, no, I don't kiss my mom, he's saying yes to a choice that was kind of already in the scene, which is like, this kid, it's an emotional dependency, not a physical one. So he's not denying anything. What do you think about that?
I was going to ask you about this. What I tell my students is, if you get a handle of the game of the scene, that gives you kind of a frame for it, then inside that, if you know what the game is, like... give me an example of what we just did in terms of the mother-son thing. Okay?
Yeah, you're emotionally dependent.
Right, and that's the game of it, right?
Right.
Okay? So then I could say no because I understand what the game is.
Yeah, we've got the boundary set up.
Yeah. Does that help you?
Yeah, I think so.
At the UCB, we this is what
Matt Bester and Ian Roberts will say very explicitly is yes and is super important until you have your game, and then it doesn't matter as much, which is like sacrilege. They were like trying to be badasses when they said that.
But I think that's really practical because what happens with students, as you know, is they think they have to say yes to everything, and then you get kind of just like this.
Once you get a feel for it, you just say yes to whatever makes sense for that world. But I think what saying yes means is like make interesting choices, like what is the most interesting possibility that you can live with? So I mean, I think that's a factor.
So you're saying yes to your character, basically. If your character is someone like your character was, you know, you don't make out with your mom.
He's yesing his character, yeah.
But you're still in the scene where saying no would be, oh, stop, we're not, you don't ask me that question, ask me.
He also got emotionally reactive.
Yeah.
I feel like a yes, a no is okay if it like adds more than it takes away. Like it left us with an emotional thing.
You're saying yes to reality of the scene.
Yeah.
Great.
That's a hard one.
Well, let's another question right next to you there.
Yeah, I was wondering, what is the weirdest suggestion you guys have received over your careers?
Well, I was on a Herald team for a long time that was called Monkey Dick. We named it thinking we were so funny to name it this obscene thing, which was funny for like a day. And then we were a team for 4 years. And several times in that team's run, we got the suggestion Monkey Dick. Because we'd be like, hi, we're Monkey Dick. We have a suggestion. And then way in the back, somebody would be like, Monkey Dick. We'd be like, okay. We'd have to do it. Like our pun. So that was the weirdest one I got.
I think the lesson there is if you want a weird suggestion like Monkey Dick, just name your team.
Yeah, that's right. I also got be funny as one of the suggestions. There was like four people in the audience. It was like a very early indie show, low confidence time. They're like, be funny. It's like, I heard be funny, thank you, and we'll try that.
If that doesn't affect your low self-esteem, I don't know what does.
Yeah.
Great, we got time for a couple more questions. Yeah, right here. Bringing the microphone. I love this microphone.
So I'm a part of a college improv group, and we're kind of curious on how do you go from college improv to something like UCB or, you know.
That's a good question. I started when I was 30, so wait 10 years. Get really depressed and ruin your life a couple times so that when you get it, you're like really grateful for it. And you, you're really like
it. All right, thanks.
No.
That is Will Hines' message to the millennium generation.
I think you got to move to a city where there's a big improv scene. Not like the big three are LA, Chicago, and New York, but there's also lots of cities that have pretty burgeoning ones. Denver's got a pretty burgeoning one.
Austin's got a huge one.
Austin has a really big one. Portland has got one that's growing. So just like you got to just find a community. Improv is a group sport, so you need a group. I don't know.
Great. Another question?
Okay, thank you.
What's the name of your college improv group?
Cabaret.
What is it?
Cabaret.
Ooh, I like it. Any non-pun college improv group name I love.
Do you ever get cabaret as a suggestion? No. Oh, good. Good.
Yeah.
Try Monkey Dick.
Yeah. If you change your name to like Cababra or like something that had some weird pun in it, you'd get that. Yeah, I'm funny.
Any more questions? I've got one for you.
This guy's got one.
Okay, great.
Hang on, we want the microphone.
We want to see him run over there with the microphone.
So I see all this, you know, improv and whatnot. What's your take on monologues with kind of like Phil Hartman, you know, kind of that kind of improv, kind of take something and run with it during the bit?
What are you referring to with Phil Hartman?
So before he was on SNL, he was part of the...
The Groundlings.
Right. And they're an improv group.
Community
yes no?
theater.
I really don't
they're
know.
A theater, and they have a main stage group. Yeah.
And so, okay, I guess then, never mind. I thought he was part of an improv group, so I'm completely wrong.
You had a question. I was just...
So, when somebody tries to run with a monologue during the bit, you know, they try to, like, turn off to, you know, the kind of as you did with the whole, like, I'm going to tell you something about life, got everyone's assholes, like, I just did some LSD, you know, blah, blah, blah. At what point do you kind of, does somebody else cut that person off?
I mean, it's a cooperative sport, so you got to be looking. I mean, if you're playing with someone who just wants to dominate and run the show, it's going to be bad. But you're allowed to solo. You're allowed to solo for a little while, so it's not inappropriate to, like, kind of take the spotlight for some amount of time if you got something good. I don't know, like, it's monologues are part of the deal, so if you're gracious with it, I feel like it's okay. What do you think?
I totally agree with it. Because the thing is, when that's going on, I'm still listening to Will, and I'm still being affected by him. I want to ask you some questions, because we got to wrap this up pretty soon.
Okay.
A lot of people now, a lot of students come to UCB.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's like 6,000 a year in New York and 4,000 a year in LA.
And in places now, it's blessed with a lot of fame. How have you seen the fame part get in students' way?
You just get people who aren't in love with it before they get there. In the old days, it was so hard to find that. It was self-selecting. In order just to find the website and find the building, you had to love it. And now it's like, oh, I was told that I might get famous if I do this. What is this? What's happening? Who are you? Why do I? And so they don't have the passion. There's a lot more of that. So the lower levels are a lot of like just teaching what it is. So it just slows it up.
Do you find that frustrating?
Yeah, but I get it. That's just part of the that's part of growing. I've just taught level one this year a lot for the first time in a while, and people are cool. I accept it. I just try to answer their questions and be honest. I don't overly sell it. I feel like the people who love it will stick around.
Have you found difference between New York and LA in terms of students?
Not really. There's a slight higher incidence of empty-headed actors in LA. Not that much, though.
Like the model types.
Yeah, good-looking people who can't think of a noun to save their lives.
Suggestion? Headshot? Agent? Opportunity?
not too many, though.
How have you been able...
You know what else is good about LA? They're much more polite. In New York, you'd give a note, they'd be like, I don't get it. Like, how come a game of the scene doesn't, like, do this? And in LA, they're always like, oh, cool, thanks. No, good, man, good.
Are they, like, writing it down in their notebook?
They don't know how to write.
Okay. Also, how have you been able to navigate the popularity contest, the lobbying, and the politics at the UCB?
I always, I never tried to play it, you know? I was always like...
To your detriment?
Sometimes. But also just to a zen-like acceptance. Just like, they'll pick me if they want me, and if they don't, then I wasn't meant to do it. Like, I was never picked to be in any of the touring companies or the touring shows. Like, and that was sort of like a lot of the cool kids got to, like, travel in the early days of... And I was like, they never asked me, and I was like, guess I'm not cool enough. I don't give a shit. I mean, I just didn't think about it. You can get lost in that if you worry about that.
How have you been able to deal with some of your students go on, they become very famous? Some people, the theater, become very famous. Where is Will Hines' piece of the pie?
My piece of the pie is that I'm not in a cubicle at an insurance company in Hartford, Connecticut, you know? My piece of the pie is that I get to do improv with people that I like all the time. That's my piece of
the
pie.
But there had to be a part of you at one time that felt resentment or jealousy.
I'm not bullshitting you. I never felt that way.
Ever?
Not really. You know why? Because the people who have made our UCB have been the good people. I think if people that I thought were bad made it, I would be angry. But like Bobby Moynihan is like an amazing performer. He's like one of the best performers I ever saw.
What made him so great?
I don't know, man. That dude had it. The people loved him every time he opened his mouth. Still do. He's great. And he's a sweetheart. And he's like a really good actor. And he loves improv. When he got SNL, I was like, that's good. You know? Aubrey was like super funny, good actor. Hardworking. The Broad City, Alana and Abby were the best. They were the best.
And what?
So it's like when the good people get it, you're like, yeah, the justice. So that's happened more often. Is there anybody that I don't like who's made it? Oh yeah, never mind.
So
sometimes, not that often though.
Is there somebody who you?
I have made it beyond my wildest dreams.
No, you're not just saying it. This
no,
is
no,
bullshit.
I never thought that I'd be able to be on a performance team at the UCB Theater. When I saw the UCB 4, if you told me, in 2 years you'll be performing at their theater, I would have not believed you.
And they're like, oh, in 10 years, you're going to be one of the guys running the school. That's unfathomable.
So why? You have this, you're living beyond your wildest dreams. Then
that's
you decide.
It's all house money at this point.
Okay. So then you go to L.A.
Yeah. Now it's just a matter of, like, believing in myself. Like, I only want to go for it so that I know I tried. The results are immaterial to me. I just want to know that I went for it.
Okay.
For my own.
So tell me this.
Yeah.
You moved to L.A.
Yeah.
Okay, but before that, you said you recently went through a midlife crisis.
That's right.
Okay, and stopped drinking.
God, we talked for so long.
Yes, we did.
Sorry. Yeah, I stopped drinking. That was big.
Why was that big? How was it getting in your way?
It was freezing me in place emotionally. It enabled me to freeze myself. A lot of things. Improv, I'm hanging around people who are mostly 25 in New York City trying to be actors, but I was getting older and older. But I'm still living with people who are not getting married and not having kids, and it's just like, when are you going to grow up, Will Hines? And drinking is a way that you can not think about it for tonight and then the next night.
How did you bother?
So like, that was one of the things that started me being like, no, you got to like feel your feelings, you got to like be in the moment, you got to like just accept where you are, good and bad. And it was an eye-opener for me.
So how is it different now that you don't drink?
Just that I process things more in the moment. I just don't delay them. Like, if I'm at a party, I'm a nervous wreck.
And you're in touch with that now.
Yeah, I just feel it. And it's like, I just wait it out. And then the second half of the party, it passes, and I have a real conversation with somebody. Instead of being like, you want to sing the Gin Blossoms with me?
How has it made you a better improviser, not drinking?
Better actor. Just because you notice more, you can remember more, like more subtle things. Like, oh yeah, I know what this feels like. I remember it now. I mean, I didn't have a hard, well, maybe I did. Better actor. And I mean, everyone's got their own path. I am not a proselytizer about not drinking. Like, I feel like, however everybody finds their own path to self-improvement is okay with me. But for me, that was a big one.
We got to wrap this up. This was wonderful. What piece of advice would you give an improviser starting out today?
Just take the high road. Follow the improv principles in the way that you study improv. Like, say yes to it, top of your intelligence, don't be coy. Take gifts, give gifts. That, you know, the spirit of them works in the culture also.
Great.
That's what I would do.
Will Hines, thank you so much.
Thanks,
give him
everybody.
A hand.
And there you have it. Another episode of Improv Nerd is in the can. I want to thank Will Hines, and I want to thank Will Hines for re-improvising with me and helping me figure out what the game and the scene really means. I want to thank Megan Bryan again for bringing me to the Idaho Laugh Festival, and not only doing an Improv Nerd, but also teaching my award-winning improv classes, The Art of Slow Comedy. I want to thank Dan Schiffmacher, my producer here in Chicago. He's the one who makes me sound so slick and so professional. You wouldn't be hearing my voice without Dan. For more information about me, Jimmy Corain, the host of Improv Nerd, and my award-winning classes, The Art of Slow Comedy, just go to jimmycorain.com and also sign up for my improv blog. Every week, I will send you out a blog, a fresh new blog. I have blood out of my fingertips. I will write something for you that will make you a better improviser and a better person. The better person part is up to you. Also, we are taking over social media. Go to Improv Nerd, our Facebook page, and like us. It really helps with my low self-esteem. Follow us on Twitter, improv_nerd, and go to our YouTube channel. We are also on Feral Audio. We are not alone on Feral Audio because it is a wonderful podcast collective. People like Chelsea Peretti and Todd Barry and Dan Harmon all have wonderful podcasts. So check that out, feralaudio.com. I want to thank our sponsor, again, Pan Theater in Oakland. All you have to do is go to pantheater.com for more information about classes and shows. And I want to thank you for listening. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Oh. Hello, I'm Kyle Ayers. I'm the host of Never Seen It, the podcast where comedians rewrite famous movies and TV shows they've never seen, and then we give them a read in studio. This is a clip I want to play for you guys from an episode where Langston Kerman rewrites Scarface. He's never seen it, but he wrote a script based on what he thinks he knows about it. And here's a clip. Give it a listen.
All right. Scarface, The New Frontier. Interior, happening discotheque. Remember when we called clubs discotheques? LOL. The 70s were crazy. Night. The crowd bustles with young, hot Mexicans who are supposed to be Cuban and all are dressed in butterfly collared shirts and pants that look like JNCO jeans and pleated khakis had a really weird baby. There's sex in the air and Poppy wants a whiff.
Oh my God.
Scarface, 22 to 45.
Like he's a television audience demographic.
Devilishly handsome, not even a little bit Italian looking, so get that out of your dumb brain. Walks through the crowd with the confidence of a man who's going on MTV Cribs with the Ying Yang Twins one day. Does he actually have a scar on his face? Fuck no. Why would you even ask that? That's not important. What's important is that he is not at all a problematic stereotype and that he has come for his cocaine. As he approaches the red rope of the VIP, pronounced ve a pe in Spanish,
oh my God.
He spots his dear friend who is almost certainly going to become his enemy by the end of the film, Smooth Skin. Scarface yells out his signature line.
Ciao, Bella. It's me, Scarface.
Oh, my God.